It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. If you know where you're going to sleep tonight, if it's a place you've lived for a while, where you feel safe and secure, imagine what your life would be like if that was not the case, and if it never had been.
When I was a child, there were quite a few times when I would leave school at the end of the day and start walking for a while, and then realize I was going in the wrong direction. Or I would walk out of school and just stand there, frozen, unsure where to go. Because we moved so many times that sometimes I could not remember where I lived.
This is Bobby Dempsey. Between elementary school and high school graduation, Bobby's family moved more than 70 times, which is kind of hard to wrap your head around.
Standing in front of the school, even as an adult, it's a little impersonal and intimidating. And I imagine my 5-year-old self standing here, nervous, alone, not sure exactly where I was supposed to go, and too shy and nervous to ask anyone for help. I'm walking away from the school now, and I'm going to try and retrace the steps I would have taken as a child to get to one of the houses I lived in. There are several intersections and quite a bit of traffic, and I can only imagine walking this route alone, not sure if you're even going in the right direction or going to the right place.
This is the first episode of Going for Broke, a 3-part series about economic struggle in our time. We're collaborating with the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, bringing you real-life stories and some ideas for solutions. And I'm delighted to introduce our host for the series, broadcast and public radio journalist Ray Suarez. Welcome, Ray.
Great to be with you, Anne. You know, in the poem Death of the Hired Man, Robert Frost wrote, "Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. Something you somehow haven't to deserve." And I always took that to mean, yes, the world can be a tough place, but everybody should have a place that's home. What if we admitted, or even embraced, that we can't do it all alone? Caring for each other is definitely about what we think of as caregiving, child care and elder care. But what about the role of care in the economy, or housing, or even architecture? Those all fit into a broader movement towards something called care architecture and spatial justice. I've found it's not a hard sell in the abstract, but it gets really difficult really fast when you start spelling out what obligation would look like, could look like. What if we put care into helping Americans find homes, and into how we build dwellings, into keeping their bodies and minds sound, and how they find meaningful and well-paid work? How we live is indelibly intertwined with the care and empathy we give each other. And Bobby Dempsey is a good example of someone who has experienced this firsthand. And now, she tells other people about it as a journalist, exposing an often hidden world of constant insecurity that isn't quite homelessness. She specializes in writing about issues that have affected her and her family as a working class woman. And I asked her what many of you might be wondering right now. why did she have to move more than 70 times as a child?
Well, I grew up very poor, and my father was abusive. He was in and out of jail and had addiction problems. So once my mother left him, it was my mother and my three siblings and I. So my family lived on public assistance from the time I was born till the time I graduated high school. So we were very poor. So usually we moved because we couldn't afford to pay rent. Sometimes we also moved for our own safety because we were trying to stay away from my father, who had violated several restraining orders.
Did the experience change over time as you got older? Was there a realization that this was not how everybody else lived?
It didn't take that long for me to realize that that was a bit unusual, especially once I got in school and you start to compare notes with other kids and realize that they have usually been in the same school since kindergarten and you have been in a dozen or two dozen at that point. So that's when you start to develop cover stories and you realize that you don't want to tell people how many times you've moved, which is part of the reason that our paper trail is so unreliable, because often we wouldn't notify the school that we had moved because we would have to change schools, first of all, sometimes. And I think there was also the sense, at least on my mother's part, that people would start asking questions or that school officials would start thinking that maybe the household was unstable and start looking into it.
And she didn't want to lose you or your siblings.
Right.
Wow. Well, parents work hard to insulate their children from their troubles. But still, moving that much must have been hard even for a little kid. Can you remember what was hard about moving so many times?
It was hard for a lot of reasons, but one of the worst parts was that you never developed friendships. You never had a group of friends, which is hard enough when you're poor and have an unstable household. You can't invite friends over. But when you're moving around so much, you don't develop any kind of connections or friend groups. You have very little support system in that sense.
So you're experiencing the sort of need to adapt quickly and then loss over and over again, aren't you?
Exactly. It's a ongoing cycle, like you said, of trying to adapt to a new situation and then at the same time bracing yourself for the inevitable relocation.
Once you were of an age where you could understand it fully, you were becoming more mature, maybe launched out into the world, did you have a chance to really talk over the nitty-gritty of it with your mother?
I have talked to my mother about it over the years, and it's kind of a painful subject because she passed away in February, but I think she always felt very guilty that she couldn't provide more stability and that she couldn't give us the Waltons type of environment and family life that she would have liked to provide. And unfortunately, it was just, you know, the circumstances were out of her control. She did try her best and I think gave us the best in those trying circumstances that she could. But especially at that time, years ago, there were not a lot of support systems or safety net programs that were available to her to help provide more stability and more housing security.
Are there issues in this whole realm that are kind of invisible to most people? Practical matters of being unstably housed, that really are things you have to deal with day to day to day.
When you don't have stable housing, you also don't have a lot of things that many people take for granted, such as appliances or a refrigerator, a washer. So then you would go to school with clothes that hadn't been washed, or you struggled to be able to take a shower before school, or even just having your school books and homework where you could access it, or where you could do homework every night, was often a challenge because sometimes you didn't know where you were going to be after school or the next day. So it was constant panic trying to keep track of the essentials that you needed for school.
How does the way you grew up change how you live now, who you are now? How does the past reach from way back there and still tap you on the shoulder?
Having a background like mine affects you in so many different ways, and some big ways and some surprising small ways. One of the big ways is that I've been determined to go in the opposite direction and be very stable. So I haven't moved in 28 years. I've lived in the same house. But in small ways, some of which are kind of amusing, but things like security questions online, when it will ask, what was your first grade elementary school? Or what was the name of the street where you grew up? And I always joke that no one will ever be able to guess my security questions because I can't even answer those questions. I have a made-up answer that I use for those because I can't remember any of those answers. So, and then, you know, in a major way, again, it always gives you that sense of fear that the bottom will fall out unexpectedly, or that something will happen that will take away your stable and secure housing and place to live that you have now.
So do you go in heavy on the nesting stuff? If I came to your house, would I find hand-knit Afghans all over the place? Because you're just so intent on making this place a secure, safe, stable, long-term home?
I do think I might go overboard on the nesting and the collecting of things. My siblings and I don't have anything from when we were children. We don't have any mementos or family heirlooms or any belongings that we had when we were children. So I, perhaps as a result, save everything. So I have every one of my children's report cards and art projects and anything else that they ever made in their lifetime. So I think it does have a boomerang effect where you kind of go in the completely opposite direction and maybe a little overboard in that sense.
Appropriately overboard. When you've got to move 70 times and you can't have things because moving involves, you know, so much taking of stuff from place to place. I mean, I think that's the most natural thing in the world, what you just described.
Yes.
In your journalism, you've tried to get your readers to understand some of the building blocks of the struggling life. Important stuff, but it's invisible to a lot of people. Do you feel like you're talking to them across a chasm, taking them on a guided tour of an America they didn't even know exists? Is there a lot they just can't understand?
I think there are a lot of things that the average reader or listener cannot understand unless they've experienced it. And some people, I think, are very reluctant to accept that that's a reality. There's a lot of objections and people trying to dispute the reality of your story and question it, because they, I think, just can't believe that that is a reality for a lot of people in this country today.
So part of the reaction you get is that, oh, it didn't really happen, or it doesn't happen like that?
It's kind of almost become a game at this point, but for websites or publications that I write for that allow comments, it's like clockwork. You can predict that within the first 5 or 10 comments, there will be somebody who will say, even poor people can afford a toothbrush, so there's no reason you can't have good teeth. Or even a poor person can, you know, stay clean, so there's no reason that you should have problems with hygiene or washing your clothes. Unfortunately, it's kind of sad that at this point, it still happens pretty frequently, that you can almost count on it.
Bobby Dempsey, thanks a lot. A pleasure talking to you.
Oh, it was great talking to you too.
That was Bobby Dempsey talking with us from rural Pennsylvania about the accumulating trauma of growing up constantly on the move from home to home.